Welcome to the Keys of the Kingdom with Brother Gregory of His Holy Church.
Welcome to Keys of the Kingdom. I'm Brother Gregory, and we're talking about the Kingdom of God, and we're talking about the Mark of the Beast, and we're in session 14 of our discussion of this mysterious term, the Mark of the Beast. And we've seen that the mark was a charagma, that is the Greek word, and charagma is specifically defined as a badge of servitude. Yes, it comes from the word crux, which is like a sharpened stick or quill, and I can give you many different examples of the use of that quill in the writing of documents in clay tablets, actually in etching on small pieces of clay, small pieces of tile that were used as identifiers, as tickets, as kind of a pass to get quarters or hospitality or food or all sorts of things. It was used, and we have lots of different examples of pictures of these tesserae, which are simply means a tile or a small clay tile that was used in the welfare system of Rome. It was used in the temples. It was used at the free circuses that were offered to the people, and we show you lots of pictures of their history. And the second one is a one that was used particularly in Tessera Hospitalis, which was actually made very decoratively like a hand, because this is like a hand of friendship. And on the other side was written letters with a carax in the clay. And then that clay was baked hard and it was given to somebody, and it meant that he could have hospitality at so-and-so's place forever. And it could pass down from son to son. And it was a way of maintaining evidence of that social welfare amongst the people. And I gave you stories before how the storekeeper where my grandmother lived said that as long as there were food in his store, there would be food on my grandmother's table because of the relationship his father had had with my grandfather. And that carried down from generation to generation. So the symbol, the little clay hand that you see on our preparingyou.com wiki page called Tesserae, it shows this hand on one side and the letters identifying what this was. It was a Tesserae of Hospitalis to whoever was carrying it. They had a place at the hearth of that family because of some sort of past service that they had provided. So that idea was alive in the Roman Republic. A republic that where the people were taken care of by this love that passed from generation to generation. Your reputation was everything. Your character was manifest by the character of your father and your father before him. And this won you the laurels or a place in the hearts of the people. But as Rome grew from a republic to an empire, this same principle of using a piece of clay to demonstrate that you had some sort of entitlement to welfare or benefits from the government of Rome carried over. And so there was tesserae, frumentariae, and numerae, and these were tokens that were given out often by magistrates to citizens, and they would carry certain symbols, and we have on that page symbols of frumentaria, tesserae, that has an eagle on it. And this was given to the poor in exchange for all sorts of things. They also used these clay tablets to identify slaves. And we show on our page on the Mark of the Beast a picture. It's a painting of slaves in the marketplace, and around their neck are they holding a clay tablet that's strapped to little leather thongs that go around the neck or twine. And that identifies who they are. And it may say something about their talent and their ownership and their price. And this was a way of identifying, keeping track. Romans loved to keep records. The Babylonians loved to keep records. They needed to keep records because they were a controlling system, and they needed those records to know who to accept, who to benefit, who to kick out. And we see Claudius kicking out all the Jews. How did he know how to kick out all the Jews? Well, maybe because of the way they dressed, but the fact is he was excluding them from the business of Rome. He was saying, you can't even do business here in this town anymore. You're not welcome here. And he was kicking them all out. We see that in the Acts of the Apostles. And of course, with those Jews went the Christians, because most of the Christians at that time were Jews, because the Jews did accept Jesus as their king by the thousands. They accepted him as king, but they ran a different kind of kingdom. Their daily ministration was taken care of through faith, hope, and charity, and the perfect law of liberty. So I also have a webpage on the Preparing You site of the welfare and the two types, and we'll get into that in another session. What I was going to bring up in this session was some of the recent events that have happened in Colorado. There was another shooting. It wasn't like Columbine. It was just a single individual who was shot and one person died, and it was the shooter himself. It was an interesting thing that we saw in the reporting of this story. I happened to be in somebody else's house who has a news feed, you know, through satellite dish out here, and I saw the students being ushered out of the school and going past the police officers who were checking them for weapons because they didn't know how many people were involved, and they're erring on the side of precaution, and they're getting the students out, and you're getting these different reports. But as the story unfolded, you would think that you could read almost any newscast and get a very detailed explanation of what happened. Well, the fact is that the details are not always included in every report. We found and report after report after report, they talk about a student who was very opinionated. And this is based on testimony of another student that said he was a very opinionated individual. But what he actually said, when you hear the actual interview, is that he was an opinionated socialist. Yes, he was a socialist. And he had a big website up about being socialist, and he was talking about people, certain Republicans should die because they seem to be anti-socialist. And he was very, very violent against that. We don't hear a lot about the gun. It was a shotgun. It was not an automatic weapon. And the fact is, many of the people who have used automatic weapons, the people they were trying to kill were saved because their automatic weapon in the search for the bigger magazine ended up jamming, because many of the big magazines do jam the guns. But shotguns are very lethal. He only shot one person, and he seems to have shot that one person because they walked around the corner, and it was a young girl, and she was in critical condition, still is at this time, and we're praying that she gets better. Just a terrible shame that she was shot at all. And what was driving this individual opinionated socialist to want to go and kill people? Well, he had an argument with his debate coach who worked in the library, and he was going to go get him. But what is missing from the story, what is really interestingly missing from the story, is that he was stopped. The whole thing was over in a matter of seconds. That's right, a matter of seconds. You know, just a few minutes, and this whole episode ended. How come it ended? Well, somebody in the school had a gun too. They also had a gun. Somebody was armed. It was actually an off-duty police officer who was in the school working as evidently a resource officer. I'm not sure exactly what he does. But as soon as he heard the shots, he ran down the hallway as fast as he could to the source of the shooting. It was a long hallway. He got there, and as soon as he came into the library, he began to announce that he was a member of the sheriff's department and that everybody was to get down. Well, the young man who was doing this terrible thing immediately retreated in a corner and shot himself. And you don't hear that this was stopped. People stop being injured, stop being threatened because somebody else had a gun. You see, gun-free zones are not safe. But the interesting psychology, so you can read the fact that he had a gun on things like gun.com, Russian news media, they reported that, Christian scientists, they reported it, and I'm sure you'll hear about it from other more conservative newscasts. But the general consensus is they would say that somebody, a resource officer, a school employee, was about to confront the shooter. But they don't say an armed employee, because we've seen before when unarmed teachers, etc., confront these shooters, they get shot. There's several incidences where somebody came onto a school with guns and they met up with somebody with guns, a gun, who disarmed them even, saved their life. In this case, he immediately ran and shot himself. One of the interesting things is I've heard that he's quite a gamer, video gamer. And in video games, what you do sometimes when you're shoot up video games, and I just discovered this because I don't play many of these games, but if you want to restart the game, you want to go back to the beginning and start over again because things are not working out, the first thing you can do is shoot yourself. You can actually do this in the video game. Kill yourself. You know, jump out and kill yourself, and then you just reboot. Well, unfortunately, he's not rebooting. He is dead. And so there's something going on here in the mindset that is affecting these people, that where they actually get violent and want to go out and kill people and murder people. I wouldn't be surprised if there was prescribed drugs involved in this individual's life. There is in most of these shooting cases. And the reason we bring this up in our series on the Mark of the Beast, because this is really the series of the Mark of the Beasties, the character of the Beasties, the spirit of the Beasties. And you see, when you work for the Beast, you take on his identity. When you serve the Beast, you take on the identity of the Beast. You will become destructive, therefore you will become self-destructive. And the Mark of God doesn't allow you to go in that direction. It actually wants you to have life more abundant. It's a different idea, a different concept, a different spirit that is present. And so we must be on guard on that whole thing. And one of the web pages I just put up recently on our Preparing You site is this two types of welfare, and welfare types, I think, is the name of the page. And it shows you that in Rome, which was the beast, and then now we have the image of the beast. Some people think that the Rome was the beast and the image of the beast are standing side by side. And really, you have the Rome existed with a certain spirit that dominated it, not originally. Originally, it was a republic, but it became dominated by this tyrannical, bestial type of spirit and personality. And we see it in their emperors, and we see it in the things that they did. And then that was wounded, it was set back, and now you have the image of the beast, the similitude of the beast, something that is like the beast. It's not like a reflection that you're going to see, like a ghostly reflection. It is like the beast. It's not the beast, but it is like the beast. But it has that beast spirit in it. And it comes from this, out of the land with these two little horns that, but still becomes this roaring beast that can devour everybody. But anyway, another thing I wanted to mention is Harold Bell Wright, who's an author, actually one of the most prominent authors in history of the United States. I mean, he outsold Edgar Rice Burroughs, and you don't even hardly know who he is. His books have been rewritten, so to speak. I don't know how serious that rewriting is, but if you want some reading material for your children, you know, fictional reading material that is good, try Harold Bell Wright. Get those books and see what he had to say about the church back in his day, which isn't that far ago. He's an American author, and find out why his books have fallen so much out of popularity with the modern church. And you'll be able to figure it out if you read a few of his books. Anyway, somebody brought up the book The Anatomy of the State by Murray Rothbard, and talks about it being 20 or so pages downloaded from Mises.org. Several of the articles there have been kind of interesting, and some of them referring to me, or at least quoting some of my articles. In that book, there's a statement. The German sociologist Franz Oppenheimer pointed out two mutually exclusive ways of acquiring wealth. One of those ways was the production and exchange method. He called that economic means. You produce something, you exchange for something else, and you can accumulate wealth. You do that by sweat and toil. And then he says the other way is by force and violence, to seize goods and services produced by others. This he determined was political means. Well, of course, when you first think of force and violence, seizing the goods of others, you think of robbery. But see, robbery is things taken by pirates. And even though they have wealth, you can take back from them anytime you can overcome them. But to actually obtain the wealth so that it becomes yours, you need to have a way where there is no recourse. It's not pirates. It's not stealing. It uses force. It seizes goods, but it does it legally. And so therefore, that is by political means. And so what does that mean, political means? Well, the political, you know, there's a number of definitions for politics. And some say it's from the Greek word poly, meaning many, and tics, meaning blood-sucking insects. But basically, poly has to do with the people, how the people come together, how many people become as one. Now, there are two ways to do that. And one is by means of free will, choice, in coming together, and the other is by social compact. Both are political, but one has as its base the choice remaining with the people, so it's poly, but they all choose to work together as one, and the other is poly, but they are bound together as one by social compact. In order to have that social compact, you must make a covenant with the people. You must make an agreement with the people. Now, there are many ways in which you can do that. One is constructive, and the other is executed. Now, people say, oh, well, I didn't sign a contract because, you know, where's the contract? But the reality is you can be bound by a contract if you enter into an activity. I mean, like, if you want to get into the mafia, often the mafia is going to have you commit a crime. They want you to commit some sort of crime, you know, like kill this guy, just murder this guy, I want to get rid of him. You kill this guy, and I'll let you in. You will move up in the ranks because you have committed a crime like they commit. And so they know they got you. You're one of theirs. If you're going to murder somebody, you're not just a government plant in their organization, that you're one of them. And so that's pretty much the way politics really works. They get you to either sign a contract, make some application, that would be an executed way in which you agree that it's okay, you know, like you say, I want to be a part of your group, your politic. I want to be one of many. And so I'm going to do what you say. Maybe like Herod required that you get baptized and registered with the temple, and scribes would register you with the temple, your name and who you were and all this stuff. And you would be given a little stone to identify you. So that was one way. That's an executed way in which you become a member. And then you have to pay into the temple. And then you can become part of their politic and be one of their beneficiaries of that system. You would receive benefits from that temple. You can also become a member because of the actions of others. Say, for instance, your father signs you up. Now, you didn't sign up. You didn't make any agreement, but your father owns you because he has given you life. And so he could sign you up, indenture you. But then when you became of age, you could denounce your father and decide to go, you know, be a denizen or whatever. Or maybe be adopted by somebody else. And this process was called being manumitted in Rome. If your father says, I want the state to be a provider, a benefactor for you. I want you to be able to get the benefits of the politic of the state under the Roman Empire. You would be manumitted from your father's household, and now you would be in the household of the state, and they would recognize that your father is legally your father, but the state would now be parens patria. It would have this rule over you, and it would be determining, you know, like your education and when you could do things, when you could get benefits. And your benefits would not come from the family necessarily. They would become from the state, because the state was now your new family. And the emperor would be called Patronus. And of course, all this happened in Rome. Originally, you were a member of your individual family or clan. And then now, under the new Roman imperial rule, you're a member of the state. And the state is your father. So this is part of that process of becoming part of this one-purse politic, as opposed to a politic composed of free choices, where everybody exercised the liberty of coming together and doing things together. And the fact is, there's many examples of society where They came together and they built roads and hospitals and schools and all these things with no central authority, no bound together politic under a social compact. Their compact was with God, which God requires that you love his ways and you love one another. So they were a politic too, but they were in what we would call a pure republic. The word republic coming from the Latin, libera res publica, free from things public, but still a part of a politic. Many people acting as one, but each one maintaining the right to choose how he would function in relationship to everybody else in the politic. You could not draft such a person. You could not tax such a person within the state, within that politic. He would be free, but in order to maintain that freedom and maintain his society, he would have to voluntarily help take care of it, help provide for it, help provide for its members, help build those bonds of love for one another. So anyway, this is really the conflict throughout the Bible between God and the kings and pharaohs and Nimrods of the world. In Matthew 11:13, we see, "For all the prophets and the law prophesied until John." Until John what? If we go back to verse 12, it says, "And from the day of John the Baptist until now, the kingdom of heaven suffereth violence, and the violent take it by force." Now, you see that same word that they talk about, suffering violence and the violent take it by force. We see the same word used again, and the word is biazo, and we see it used in Luke 16:16. The law and the prophets, again, we see that phrase, all of the prophets and the law prophesied until John, which was in Matthew 11:13. We see it in the one verse, Luke 16:16. The law and the prophets were until John. Since that time, the kingdom of God, says kingdom of God instead of kingdom of heaven, is preached, and every man presseth into it. Same word used, biazo, but they translate it presseth into it instead of this reference to suffereth violence and taking it by force. So what does that word actually mean? They use force, they apply force, they compel, they inflict even violence to enforce something. Well, in the politic established by social compact, by covenant, then they establish that the services of that system by force. In other words, they forcefully take from one class of citizen and give to another. And you see, until John the Baptist, this is the way you would see throughout the world, everywhere in the world. This is what they were doing. Rome was doing it. Judea was doing it. They were all doing it. But John the Baptist said, no, that's not what you want to do. If your brother doesn't have a coat and you have two coats, you should share. You should give him one. In other words, free will offerings again. Back to the Old Testament, free will offerings. And he says you should do the same in meats. So this is a big distinction between all the other systems that are operating by forcing their neighbor to contribute to the welfare of each other and those systems which use free will offerings to do this. And in that distinction, if you will not do that, if you will not take care of one another by free will offerings, in a system based on faith, hope, and charity, and that perfect law of liberty that Paul talks about, then you will not be free, and you are not following John the Baptist, and therefore you are not following Christ, therefore you are not a Christian, therefore you are in apostasy, therefore you are under a strong delusion if you think you are, and you need to turn around and repent. Because when you compel your neighbor to provide you with education, welfare, health care, anything, you're moving according to the spirit of the beast. You're a beastie. Yeah, you're a little beastie. You want to take away from your neighbor. Now you say, well, wait a minute, I pay in. But do you pay in enough? And we'll talk a little bit about that when we come back. Plus, we'll show you the manifestation of this spirit and how it manifests itself generation after generation for those who follow the ways of the beast instead of following the ways of Christ, and worship the beast instead of worship Christ. And we'll show you what that means when we come back to Keys to the Kingdom. Well, welcome back to Keys to the Kingdom. I'm Brother Gregory, and we're talking about this mark of the beast, which we see in Revelation 13. And it talks about, and he had power to give life unto the image of the beast. This, what was giving life to the image of the beast? We go back to 14, and deceiveth them that dwell on the earth. And go back to 13, and he doeth great wonders. And go back to 12, and he exercises all power of the first beast. So there's two beasts we're talking about. And I beheld another beast in verse 11 coming up out of the earth. Out of what? The law of the land, not the law of the sea, but out of the earth. And he had two horns like a lamb. A lamb has little tiny horns, not much authority. But he spake as a dragon. Okay, now that can mean a number of things. Dragon representing the devil, dragon being a giant beast, a loud roaring voice. These all are things that you could apply to that. You have to be careful about locking yourself into these metaphors and allegories because you're going to miss the spirit of what is being said because you cling to the symbol instead of its meaning. And he exercises all power of the first beast, and he causes the earth and causeth the earth and them which dwell therein to worship the first beast, whose deadly wound was healed. In other words, you're going to be looking to the symbols and ways of the first beast. You're going to serve those ways. You're going to be like them. You're going to pick up those symbols. You're going to pick up those characters. You're going to pick up that nature. You're going to pick up his law. You're not going to work by the law of the land. You're going to work by the law of the first beast. And of course, the first beast was Rome. So we're talking about the law of Rome. And of course, we know civil law, Roman civil law are the same systems of jurisprudence. You're using Roman law. You're not using common law. Common law is what was in America back in the 16, 1700s. Common law was not Roman law. It was common law. It's a different system of law. It is not civil law. It is common law. This beast that comes up out of the sea is going to have great power. It can make fire come down from heaven on earth in the sight of men. That's a pretty powerful thing. I mean, like, nobody can do that. Well, I mean, the United States Air Force could do that. I mean, they can make fire come down from the heavens in the sight of men. They can actually send ballistic missiles up into space and have them come back down with nuclear bombs in, which would be tremendous fire. But they could have B-52s go over and drop fire bombs. They could send rockets up into the air in the atmosphere and come down and just bomb whole cities out of existence. They could do that. Is that what it means? I wonder. You tell me. What's the Spirit telling you? And deceiveth them that dwell on the earth by means of those miracles which he had power to do in the sight of the beast, saying to them that dwell on the earth that they should make an image to the beast which had the wound by a sword and did live. So it had a wound by a sword. So now, how much did the metaphor, how far do we take it? How far do we not take it? Some sort of violent action. So the fact is, as these prophecies, they're not really dreams, but they're like dreams. And they will glean symbols to try to express to you principles and precepts. And because they're very powerful, you will see those symbols manifested in real time, you know, actual physical representation of these symbols in space, in time. You know, it's kind of a quantum thing, so that, you know, there'll actually be an incident where there will be a sword and somebody will get stabbed and wounded, but they will live. I mean, this will actually happen. But you have to be careful, because if you start looking and say, oh, I found that here, I found this here, then you're going to start focusing on the event, the thing, the sword. I mean, it's like Hitler. He's going around looking for the spear that pierced Jesus, because somehow that will give him power. But he doesn't understand. The spear that pierced Jesus was a willingness to sacrifice himself, because it wouldn't have happened had he not had the spirit of willing personal sacrifice. You see, there's the power. It's not in the object. That's a delusion. So don't be too hasty to look for the symbols of prophecy. You will find them. If you look around, you will find them. And we'll take a look at one of them. But anyway, and he had power to to give life unto the image. Now, remember, you know, like a government doesn't have any life. It doesn't have any power. It only has the life of the people that are within it. So these beasts, if they're representing governments, they don't really have any power except for the life of the people that enter in and make a covenant with them and worship them, because worship has to do with serving. You see, and that's where they get their life. You know, like I say, Hitler didn't invade Poland. Germans invaded Poland at the order of Hitler. Those little beasties who swore allegiance to Adolf, they invaded Poland. He didn't invade Poland. He's still back there in the capital. So anyway, that image of the beast should both speak and cause that as many as would not worship the image of the beast should be killed. Now, that word should be killed, and we'll look at that. It actually means that they might make them die by any means. It doesn't necessarily mean that they're going to kill them. It may mean that they will exclude them. And Romans did this when certain Roman soldiers refused to take oaths that were supposed to guarantee their loyalty, so that if the emperor wanted to kill Christians, that these soldiers would help him do it. Well, some of the Roman soldiers were actually Christians, and they refused to take that oath, and because they didn't want to be forced to kill their own brothers. I mean, even Romans who were not Christians refused to take that oath because they didn't want to be bound to go out and kill their brother soldiers who were Christians yet fighting alongside of them, you know, in the defense of the weak and the poor. I mean, the Roman army did a lot of good things. Then there were Christians in the Roman army. I mean, one of the men of great faith that Jesus talks about was a Roman centurion. And John the Baptist is even asked by soldiers, what about us? Because they know they have this different status. They're bound in this service. And he says, well, be content with your wages. And, you know, don't take anything by force. He doesn't mean don't use your sword. He means don't take anything away from people, you know, like a thief by force. And then we go into that in other places. But anyway, the point is that they refused to take that oath, and so they stripped them of their uniform. It happened to be up in Gaul at the time, happened to be in winter at the time, and they were near a lake that was frozen, and they chased them out onto the lake without any clothes, where they were naked, because they wouldn't take this oath. They said, well, okay, oath has to be voluntary, but we don't have to give you any clothes. We don't have to give you any place to stand. Our jurisdiction is on the land, so we're going to push you out over the water, frozen, but you'll be out on the ice. And they stayed out there until they all died rather than take the oath. Now, that takes character. You got guys in your neighborhood with that kind of character? But anyway, one of them finally relented and crawled in, begging to be warmed up. And one of the officers standing by, having seen this, having known these men, had lived with these men who just gave up their life for refusing to take the oath, he took off his cloak and gave it to the man there who was freezing, and he went out on the ice naked and died. And the end result is this campaign to make these soldiers all take the oath was falling along the wayside. It wasn't working. They were trying to compel them to submit and take this oath, and they wouldn't do it. They were men of character. I mean, the only thing you see like that now is the guy on Duck Dynasty, and I'm curious as to how that will turn out, where he's being suspended because of something he said. Because evidently his bosses at the network that he has his program on don't like free speech. They're opposed to free speech, and they don't want him to be speaking freely. They don't want him to have an opinion, and they want to muffle him. And so it'll be interesting to see what happens with that. But anyway, another story. I'll bring you to another symbol. Now, the symbol is 666. Everybody's trying to figure out, and they do this whole thing with names, and Bill Clinton is name 666, and Nero's name is 666, and they do it by taking the letters and connecting them. And I once did a whole deal where I proved that Barney, the purple dinosaur guy on TV for kids, I took his name and I proved that he was the beast because his name worked out to 666 too. So anyway, you know, there may be a reality to that somewhere, but lots of people do that. You just go on and on. It's a distraction. You're missing the spirit of the whole thing. Here, let me read to you a requirement in the United States government. I know when this requirement was actually passed into law, it was with the Insurance and Portability Act way back in the last millennium. And I saw this act. I was reading every law being passed for 1 year. And this is really hard to do, being passed in Congress. I mean, those guys would have to read all the time. They couldn't get anything done. They can't read all these laws. And as a matter of fact, we know that they're passing laws that they haven't even had a chance to read. And they're told that in order to find out what's in the bill, you have to pass it, because they're not going to show you a copy before you vote on it. That's insane. That's the kind of insanity. People are going to look back in history and say, the people in America are insane. We're insane back in those days. Somehow or other, their brains were taken over by some sort of strong delusion, and they had no common sense anymore. That actually goes on. But anyway, I was drawn to read the bill. I mean, I don't do this for a living, but something led me to read the bill, and I'm reading, and I get down to sections 511, 512, and 513, which are actually significant numbers. And there's actually a code within a code. It was during this process I was led to understand the code within a code. These laws are so big, so voluminous, you couldn't keep track of all the stuff. And they constantly have these little writers stuck in these bills to get things passed. And they put, you know, great names on the bill, you know, like Final Solution. Oh, no, wait a minute. Hitler used that. No, they use names like Insurance Portability Act. So you can remove your insurance from one employer to another employer and not lose coverage. Oh, it's just for your benefit. Oh, it's a wonderful idea. Except for it's like the size of the New York telephone book. It's huge. And in it, it's got all these other little provisions that really don't have anything to do with that. And I've written articles on it. You can go look them up. But in it, they made certain requirements in relationship to actually Social Security numbers. It's a requirement of statutorily prescribed procedures to improve the effectiveness of child support enforcement. Sounds like a great idea. Types of procedures required in order to satisfy Section 654.20A of this title. Each state must have in effect laws requiring the use of the following procedures consistent with this section and with regulations of the Secretary to increase the effectiveness of the program which the state administers under this part. And this is in Title 42, Chapter 7, Subchapter 4, Part D, and a particular section. And I'll tell you the section in a moment. Let's read it. Part 13, Recording of Social Security Numbers in Certain Family Matters, Procedures Requiring that the Social Security Number of any applicant for a professional license, this is Part A, any applicant for a professional license, driver's license, occupational license, recreational license, a marriage license, be recorded on the application. For the purpose of subparagraph A, if a state allows the use of a number other than a Social Security number to be used on the face of this document while the Social Security number is kept on file at the agency, the state shall so advise any applicants. In other words, some states, like I think it's Arizona, has a number on your driver's license, but it's not your Social Security number, but it is actually created by your Social Security number going through a particular formula. So anybody can look at the Arizona driver's license, reverse that formula, and determine what that individual's Social Security number is. So in essence, it is your Social Security number, but you can't tell by just looking at it what the Social Security number. You have to actually do some math. So anyway, not really that much of a concealment, but they do it. But the point is that even though obtaining a Social Security number is still counted as voluntary within the Social Security Administration, because it's a serious step to take, because you're waiving a right to a portion of your labor and you're going to have to pay into this system of social welfare as much as 14% of everything you make every year goes into that system of social welfare. So that's a serious step. And that is a voluntary program, so you have to volunteer to get that number and enter into that program. Once you enter into that program, you don't necessarily have the voluntary right to leave it. But anyway, the point is, if you did not volunteer, and there are case laws that you can see. In Texas, there's been several of these where somebody didn't have a Social Security number and were hired at a job. And after a while, because of threatening letters from the IRS, they were fired from their job because they wouldn't get a Social Security number. And the company was worried that it might be fined because the letters were kind of threatening, and they didn't know. They said, you may be subject to a fine, et cetera, et cetera. And of course, you would be if that person had a Social Security number and you failed to obtain it. But they weren't saying if he doesn't have one and you have proven, and there's actually a form you can fill out now to prove that you don't have one if you never had one. And you can fill that out and the company would show that and they wouldn't necessarily be subject to a fine. But anyway, they fired him, and the Department of Human Resources in Texas sued the company. And they had to pay like $10,000 because they wrongfully fired this individual, because you can't fire somebody. You can't even refuse to hire somebody because they don't have a Social Security number. But now it's getting very difficult because they're changing the laws. You can't get a driver's license, an occupational license, a recreational license, or even a marriage license unless you record that number on the application. Now, theoretically, you should be able to get these things if you don't have that number and never had that number. But there's a question as to whether or not you're breaking the law. And they need to clarify that. And the only way you can clarify that is to break the law and then get prosecuted and take it to court, because they're just not going to make it clear. But anyway, the interesting thing about this whole procedure is this is Title 42, Chapter 7, Subchapter 4, Part D of Section 666. So there you go. The mark of the beast is evidently, by 666 standards, is connected to the Social Security number that says you can't get a job, you can't get a license to drive, you can't open a bank account, you can't do anything to sustain life and work in the system or work in the world unless you have that number. Now, technically, you don't need that number, but they have tied it to it. So is the Social Security number the mark of the beast? It certainly is your employer identification number. That's right. You can go out and get an employee identification number. I said employer, I meant employee identification number. You can go out and get an EIN, or which is an employer identification number, or you could get a TIN, a tax identification number, or you can get a Social Security number, an SSN. And a Social Security number is a tax identification number. So it is your employee identification number, and it's referred to this in much of the federal literature. So as an employee, you now work for the state. And we go through this in employee versus enslaved. And we're not saying that you shouldn't do these things. We're not saying that these things are bad. We're saying what these things are. You have to determine, based upon the leading of the Holy Spirit in your own heart, as to what is bad for you and what is good for you, what you should do and what you should not do. But a lot of people are doing things and they don't understand what they're doing. They just do them because so-and-so said they should do it. Or that, aren't we supposed to do this? They have no idea. They're like zombies walking through life. They don't know where, they're like pinballs, you know. You just bang it and it goes zooming up and it bounces off here and it bounces off there. Doesn't know what it's doing. It's just bouncing around. We're showing you so that you don't have a lack of knowledge as to what's happening. When you go get these numbers, you are pledging your labor to serve the administration of the state, to take care of the needy of society and provide for the welfare of the needy as well as the welfare of the administrators of the state, because they're going to take a portion of everything that you sacrifice for the needy. They're going to take a portion to feed themselves. Just like the Levites could do. The Levites could eat of the offerings that you made to the temple. They could eat of that. They could take it for their own need. That was okay. But the difference between the Levites and the administrations of the states that use force is the Levites couldn't use force. They had to depend upon free will offerings. They couldn't kick in your door. They couldn't refuse you access to going and getting a job or traveling down the road. If you didn't give to them, they had to depend upon faith, hope, and charity and the perfect law of liberty. They had to depend upon your love for God and your fellow man in what we call pure religion in order to provide for the needy of their society, the widows, the orphans, the crippled, the the people who could not survive, the genuine needy of society. We're not talking about the lazy of society. We're not talking about the apathetic or slothful of society. We're not talking about the degenerate, immoral, debaucherous members of society. We don't have to take care of them. They should end up in the gutter. If they show any sign of repentance, we can certainly help them out. But we have no obligation to help somebody, you know, who is doesn't want help, doesn't want to do what's right. I mean, if a criminal is escaping after murdering and raping somebody, and they want a ride, and they say, I don't have a car, do you have to help them? Do you have to give them a ride? No, of course not. So you don't have to help people destroy themselves. You don't have to help people destroy their families. You don't have to help people destroy their community, even though that they find themselves on hard times because that's what they're spending their day doing, destroying themselves and their family and their community, and they find themselves between a rock and a hard place, and you've got to go provide them with clean sheets and linen? No, I'm sorry. That's not tough love. Tough love is, no, you're going to have to sleep outside for a while, you know, and you have to listen to the Holy Spirit as to when to do that. But anyway, so the symbols of 666 show up all over the place, and you can get carried away by trying to follow those symbols, and that's not a good thing. Back to Revelation 13:17, the word might is from dunami, meaning to be able, have the power, whether by virtue of one's own ability and resources or of a state of mind or through favorable circumstances or by permission of law or custom. That's what it means by might. That word might there, dunamai. The word custom includes this synonym practice and therefore policy. It is again clear in the Greek text that the author in the original language is denoting the idea of favorable circumstances or permission of the legal system, or even just as a matter of policy, they might not buy or sell. That certain men might not buy or sell. And we saw that in the previous session where no man, it says that particular verse, no man is not translated from odious and medius and these other words, but is translated from tis, meaning man, or a certain man, which is most often translated certain, and sometimes man. So when you go back there and read in Revelation 13:17 that no man is actually saying a certain man, certain men might not be able to buy and sell. That's what it's saying. Certain men might not be able to buy or sell. And that certainly is the case. It was the case with the Christians and Jews in Rome who were cast out by Claudius. They couldn't buy or sell anymore in that city. And they had to know who it was who couldn't buy or sell anymore. And they identified themselves. You know, there was a sales tax. We explained this already. Sales tax in Rome. How do you know how to collect the sales tax? Now, a sales tax on the purchaser or on the seller? Well, sales tax is on the seller. He doesn't have to charge you sales tax when you buy something. He doesn't have to pay it. I mean, you don't have to pay him if he doesn't require it of you. He requires of you so that he pushes off some of the price of his goods on the state. But the reality is he could sell you the goods and he just pays the sales tax himself. That's his obligation to say it. To advertise the good for one price and sell it for a higher price is actually a little bit dishonest. But he does this because he says, well, I'm not tacking on that price. That's the state tacking on that. I'm only selling it for this amount. The reality is he's selling it for the whole amount and he's using your money to pay his tax. The sales tax is paid by the seller. And they had sales tax in. In order to have that, you had to be identifying who was selling. And if you couldn't buy or sell in the marketplace, you couldn't even get in the marketplace unless you could identify yourself. And if you were one of those Jews, including the Christian Jews, you would not be able to buy or sell in the marketplace. And many of them had to leave. They had to go out of town. Of course, I'm sure they got ways around it, had other people buying and selling for them who were not Jews and stuff like that. But the Jews were very clannish and keep themselves away from others. Okay, the word name, when they talk about the mark, had the mark or the name of the beast. The word name in the text is onoma, which does mean name, but is also used, and I'm quoting here, for everything which the name covers. It's used to express one's rank, authority, interest, cause or reason, name, on this account, whatever. So it's not, you don't have to have Nero's name tattooed on your card, but the character and authority is represented by this mark. Now, in the physical representation, certainly, you're going to see the authority of the beast issuing this card or mark that you hold in your hand or the number that you remember in your head. That's certainly going to be there. But again, we are talking about spiritual things here, the spiritual policies of the kingdom of God. You cannot have this desire to exercise rank over your neighbor, to force your neighbor to provide for you. You know, if you go down and get a social security number when you're 18 years old and you get that number and on the way to your first job, you're hit by a truck and crippled, quadriplegic for life. Social security has to take care of you forever, you know. That welfare system. Actually, you can get Social Security if you do it before your 18th. I actually know somebody this happened to. It was the day before his 18th birthday, and his parents were driving down the road, and they were hit in a head-on collision. Both his parents were killed, and he was turned into a quadriplegic. And Social Security sent him a check forever until he died. His whole story is actually just an abomination and indictment of the state, but and corruption in government, because he was actually thrown into jail and all kinds of things. Because he didn't have the, he was trying to make a living, trying to, you know, do something of value, even as a quadriplegic, and was running a machine shop, and the cord to his wheel around hospital bed was not constantly covered, so they came in and fined him. And you think, well, why were they doing that? Why were they so malicious? This guy, this poor quadriplegic, all his life trying to do something of value, providing employment for other people. And they come in and they find him for not covering up to this wheel-around hospital bed in the shop that had belonged to his parents when he's like in his 30s. I think he was actually almost in his 40s at this time. Surprisingly, he had lived that long as a quadriplegic. But it ended up that there was a mafioso guy who was in with the government who surrounded his property and wanted that piece of property. And he eventually got it, from what I understand. And he was sicking the administrators of the government on him to give him fines and cite him time and time again for all kinds of ridiculous things just to harass him and force him out of his property because he didn't want to sell. And they actually jailed him. And he got gangrene when he was in jail because he couldn't wipe himself. So, I mean, these things happen. And nobody, no news story went and covered this. Nobody saved this guy. He was just eaten up by the system. It's a long story, but I won't tell it now. But anyway, we go on to another word here. Actually, we don't really have time, I don't believe. Well, we might have. The word buy is from agorazo, which means to be in the marketplace, to attend it, hence to do business there, to buy or sell. You can't do that. We'll go back to that rule, Title 42, Section 666. Unless you've got that number, Social Security number, to put on your application, you can't get an occupational license. You can't get a business license, a professional license. You can't get any of those things unless you have that number. So yeah, you can enter into the marketplace. You might be able to go into Safeway if you got cash. I don't know how you got the cash. You can't get a job. Can't get a bank account. You can't get a driver's license unless you got that number. So you tell me, does that fit? Or are you going to say, I'm okay until I have to get the chip? No, let's go back. It's the spirit of the beast you have to get out of your heart. And then it won't be so hard to see the symbols, the evidence which are all around you. And we'll talk more about this next time on Keys of the Kingdom. Until then, may peace be upon your house and may God be with you.
You have been listening to The Keys of the Kingdom with Brother Gregory of His Holy Church. For more information on the educational ministry provided by His Holy Church and Brother Gregory, including services, counseling, lectures, books, and other audio materials, please write to His Church at Summer Lake, Box 10, Summer Lake, Oregon, 97640. You can also find us on the web at www.hisholychurch.net. Thank you.